This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on our three-hour Memorial Day special where we honor the fallen. Hope you have honored the fallen today. Said a prayer for their families. Maybe reached out to somebody if you know they lost someone. Let them know you're thinking about them. Again, I want to make sure I remind you, veterans, today can be a difficult day if you find yourself thinking about brothers in arms you lost. It's easy to get down today. Do not let that consume you. If you need help, get some help. Pick up your phone, dial 988 and press 1. Veterans, if you're feeling low and need help, the shame is not asking for help. That's the only shame there is, all right? But this is a day where we honor the fallen. The first hour was kind of a World War II hour. Second hour will kind of be Korea. Third hour will be Vietnam, just kind of how we're breaking it down today. Some more names that were sent in by you. I told you I'd read as many as I possibly could today. PFC James Edward Tobin, Captain John D. Porterfield, Specialist Donald R. Kenton, Sergeant Louis Pelizzari, Sergeant James Armstrong, Specialist William M. Bryant. We will continue on reading these names throughout the day, but we are going to do a little Korea overall story before we get into the actual specific Navy crosses, Navy cross citations we're going to read from Korea. Because Korea is not widely taught. It's not widely understood at all. And that is a very sad thing, but it's known as the Forgotten War for a reason. It just kind of got glossed over. We went in people's minds, we go from World War II to Vietnam, and we forget about this horrific conflict in the middle. I don't know whether it's because it was shorter or because there was kind of a big screw-up attached to it. I don't know what the reasons are, but you could make an argument. Fighting in Korea, the fighting up by Chosin Reservoir, was as miserable as any fighting in any conflict ever. When you're in a situation where you have to pee on your rifle barrel to warm it up so it will shoot, that's generally miserable. 70 below in some places. Horrible. So let's do a little Korea overall. All right. Post-World War II, what happens in America is there's a huge military drawdown, meaning they during the course of World War II, this country spent an inhuman amount of money on the military, on our military equipment, on our personnel, on bases, on it. It's hard to explain now because you and I have mainly lived in a military industrial complex our entire life. It's hard to explain now what America used to be like from the founding, really all the way up to World War II. America was founded on, philosophically, militarily, they wanted the Navy to be very strong because we have two gigantic oceans, obviously. We're surrounded by oceans, so you want a strong Navy. But the Army, the military itself, the land Army, was supposed to be very, very, very small. A small, highly trained bunch of people, and you have them there. So if something bad happens, then you round up some volunteers and then you train them up and then you go off to war. The founders didn't want a military base every 15 feet. They didn't want this gigantic military. They thought in the end it would be hostile to liberty. So we did not have a big military going into World War II. People don't understand that. It was small. It was tiny. It's when you look at the numbers, and I'm not going to break down all the nerd out detailed numbers here, it's amazing how small it was. It just wasn't hardly there. It wasn't hardly anything to it because we always were under the philosophy that we'll just build one up whenever we need one. That was how we lived. So post-World War II, we dumped all this money into the military. It was time to get back to our roots. That's how we looked at it. Time to dump it all. So people got kicked out. Even if you wanted to stay in the military, most people got kicked out. Nope, we're running everybody out. Nope, we're drawing down the military. Nope, equipment's gone. That's kind of, and it was how it was supposed to work, really. Closing this base, closing that base, closing this. It was gone. It was gone. It's gone. Now That brings us to Korea. Communist dirtball Kim family takes over North Korea because they're communist dirtballs. They wanted all of Korea, and they decide they're going to invade South Korea. Now that's when the United Nations steps in and says, no, you can't invade South Korea. But they were beating the crap out of the South Koreans, and they had basically run them down pretty much to the edge of South Korea. They were going to win. We decided we were going to step in and stop them. So we start sending ships over there with troops. But wrap your mind around this. We had drawn down our military so much that, yes, we had a bunch of World War II veterans in the military then, and that saved us. But there were many, 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 many guys. They completed boot camp on the ship heading for Korea. How about that for green? You're doing boot camp on the ship. So the plan is this. Picture, because I realize that this will be obvious to people who know Korea and whatnot, but for those who don't, I want you to picture an egg. All right, you got an egg? Picturing it in your mind? Well, just picture that shape. That's not what Korea's shaped like, but just for the sake of ease, picture the egg. Now draw a line right through the middle of the egg from left to right. Horizontally draw a line. So up on top's North Korea, up on bottom's South Korea. You got that in your mind? Now North Korea charges over that line in the middle, and they're pushing all the way down to South Korea, all the way through South Korea. But on the right side of that egg, there's a big old ocean. The plan was, don't land in the bottom of South Korea and try to fight our way back north. The plan was land the U.S. troops, well, the U.N. troops, they're all supposed to be United Nations, land the United Nations troops right up by the line, basically land behind the North Korean army, and then start attacking your way up north. Totally screw up their supply lines, screw up everything, land in behind them and start attacking up north. As much as I actually dislike the man, Douglas MacArthur, it was a pretty brilliant stroke. It was a stroke of genius. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. So we land and we do it. And we have to do some fighting in some cities there in North Korea. But for the most part, we've got things squared away. But that brings me back to this MacArthur guy. MacArthur wants to keep going north. He doesn't want to stay by that horizontal line you pictured in the middle of your egg. He wants to push all the way up to the top of your egg, all the way up towards China. There's a river that's a border there. He wants to push all the way up to that river, run these North Korean communists out of there. Now, that's when it gets complicated. You know, I just said China's up north, okay? China has just very, very, very recently, like 15 minutes ago, they got taken over by the communists. Mao finally defeated the nationalists in China. Mao and the communists now controlled the country. And Mao hated America. Mao even wanted to go finish off the nationalists who had escaped to what you know as Taiwan. What's Taiwan today? Mao wanted to go across the water and go get them, and we wouldn't let him. Nope, sorry. U.S. Navy says you are not allowed. Sorry. Mao hated us. And plus, we were working with Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists in China. Long story short, Mao, he doesn't like what we're doing in North Korea, and he really doesn't like it that now we're marching towards China through North Korea. So Mao has an advantage. He's a communist piece of trash, and you don't want to be a demonic communist piece of trash, but there are advantages to it, especially when it comes to war. One of the advantages is you don't feel anything for the loss of human life. Not other people's at all. Not even your own people. It means nothing to you. And Mao, what he has a lot of at this point in time, even though China just got through really with World War II and they were really poor right now and struggling in a lot of different ways, Mao did have a lot of something. Human lives. It is China after all. And when human lives mean nothing to you, well, you might as well spend what you have if it doesn't mean anything to you, right? That's a long way of saying Mao packs up, no one knows the number exactly, 300,000. We'll call it 300,000 for now because the numbers are all over the place. I've heard many higher, I've heard many lower, but a lot. 300,000 Chinese troops, and he says, south, go. And Mao points them south with a plan. And to Mao's credit, it was a very, very good plan. Mao, as much as I hate him, he might be the most evil human being who ever lived. Let's do remember, Mao wasn't like your nerdy communist college professor. Mao was a guerrilla war fighter. Mao knew military. He knew strategy. He knew combat. He knew it very well. And our guys were heading into a trap. They were heading into hell. They just didn't know it yet. We'll finish up this story and go over some of these heroic stories in just a second. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a Memorial Day. Reminder to you, you can email the show whatever you want. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. We will be back in tomorrow, back to our regularly scheduled programming of goofing off and laughing and fart sounds and talking politics, but there's not going to be any of that today. Today is a day where we honor the fallen, and this hour we're kind of doing a Korea thing. We're going to get to some Korea heroes we'll honor by name. I just want to kind of give everyone a firm footing on the basics of the conflict first. Okay, so catch you up. We are now in Korea. We are pushing north into North Korea. Douglas MacArthur and his generals are starting to get intel. A lot of intel. The intel is telling them there are a lot of Chinese troops coming down to get you. A lot. And they have many indications there are a lot of Chinese troops coming down to get them. But MacArthur, blinded by who knows what, arrogance, pride, ambition, who knows, doesn't want to believe the intel, keeps dismissing it, scoffing at the intel that the Chinese are coming down in waves. Not only that, our guys start running into Chinese troops often, and they're taking them captive when they capture them, and the Chinese troops are being very forthcoming about the fact there's a lot of us and we're coming down. But MacArthur won't listen. And part of the reason MacArthur won't listen is the Chinese, again, to their credit, they were very slick about coming down. It's hard to move that many troops without being seen. Why? Because that many troops normally comes with a lot of vehicles and just a long supply chain of some kind. You have to feed them, right? They need ammo. Unless they're Chinese communist troops, then you don't worry about feeding them. And you don't worry about giving them ammo. They essentially had no vehicles with them at all. And America was flying overhead. We had flyers flying overhead looking for these Chinese troops who were supposedly coming down. Except they were hiding during the day. They would hide in railway tunnels. They would actually tie themselves up to trees during the day so they could sleep standing up. And so the planes wouldn't see them coming overhead. They were as sneaky about getting 300,000 troops down as possible. Now that brings us to America and the situation that these heroes were about to read, the situation they're walking in. I want you to picture this. From up south to up north, or from down south to up north in Korea, there's one road. Now, don't email me with details, okay? I'm just simplifying this for everybody. There's one major road. One. It involves going through mountain passes. It is one way up. And when you get up into North Korea, they take this one way up into North Korea. And when they get to that one way up, they find themselves around basically on top of a huge frozen reservoir called Chosen Reservoir. And Chosen Reservoir, okay, picture this big reservoir. It's frozen solid. Everything is ice and snow. The freeze is setting in and it's already brutal. And there are mountains and hilltops surrounding this reservoir. We now are pretty aware of the fact that the Chinese are somewhere close by in mass. So what they do is they disperse all the troops around Chosen Reservoir, and you'll hear some of this in these citations I'm about to read. The troops, they will secure hilltops. That's what you want. You want a strategic advantage with the ground. So what you'll do is you'll take your company, you'll take your platoon, right, however many troops you have, and you'll go find a hilltop surrounding Chosen Reservoir, and you'll get up there, and you'll start digging in. You're digging fighting holes, you're laying out traps, you're laying out things so you can hear them. They would string just simple strings down the mountain with a can, with just an empty can, and drop pebbles in it. And just so if someone would hit the string and you'd know if someone was coming. And now picture this. The moment is this. You're in Chosen Reservoir. You have the hilltops, and the Chinese descend. And now you are essentially one division surrounded by about eight Chinese divisions. You are outnumbered like you can't possibly imagine. And the Chinese began to throw themselves at you. Human wave after human wave after human wave. So many Chinese troops attacking your guys in the freezing cold, mind you, that you can't possibly kill them all. The stories are common where you're mowing down Chinese troops, but there's so many coming. They're running past your fighting hole. You have to take your weapon and turn around and fight back into your line because the Chinese troops have gone past you and surrounded you. They attack at night. They attack using whistles and bugles and things like that to signal each other, but that makes it only more frightening. You're laying there. It's 30 below zero. You can't feel your feet or fingers or your face. Some guys lost their noses to frostbite, and all of a sudden, bugles are going off, and now you're stabbing Chinese communists with your bayonet and your buddy sitting beside you. This is what the Korean War was like. Completely savage. So what do you do? You have no choice in a situation like this. You must eventually fight your way out. You can't just walk out. You have to fight your way out. We'll talk about the evacuation real quick, and then we'll get to these citations. And just understand, if you've ignored the Korean War, you're in for a treat. Because when you dig into it, it's amazing. It's amazing it's not talked about more. Hang on.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day, and we are honoring the fallen today. Now we're on the Korea portion of this show. We'll get to some Vietnam stuff next hour. Okay, so that's the situation. They're up at Chosen Reservoir. They're surrounded by eight Chinese divisions. They need to get back down south. Remember that egg we drew? They need to get back down across that line. They need to get south where the Navy is waiting to ship everyone out and get everyone to safety. But remember when we were talking about there was one way north. And I know you're an intelligent person. What does that mean for how many ways there are south? One. There's one way. They have to fight their way out of Chosen Reservoir and then fight their way down this road back south. Now, the fight out of Chosen, I could do who knows how many shows on it. It's horrific. And heroic and horrible and wonderful and brave. And it's everything you can possibly imagine. At one point in time, there's an army convoy of trucks trying to get out. And the Chinese know where the roads are because there aren't any roads. There's like one road. So they keep ambushing this. And one of these convoys had wounded troops in the back of the trucks. And the Chinese, once they had stopped the convoy... And to be clear about this, because one of these guys is in one of these convoys that I'm about to do. The convoy truck drivers, maybe you think of a truck driver as, maybe you think of it somehow as a lesser military role. These guys who got in the vehicles and drove them, who got in these trucks and drove them, were all heroes. Because there are stories, story after story after story of, if you're one of the drivers, the Chinese aren't stupid. They understand who's controlling the vehicle. They're all shooting at the driver. And so there are so many stories of the driver driving this truck. Pop, pop, pop. Driver's dead. Someone else runs right up to the truck, pulls him out of the truck, gets in and starts driving. Pop, pop, pop. He's dead. Next guy runs up, grabs it. Imagine that. Imagine watching two, three guys get slaughtered because he's driving the truck. And you run up and just pull him out and you go sit in his blood and fire up the truck because you know it's the only way any of you live. And one of these stories, the convoy actually gets stopped and the Chinese start burning the trucks while our guys are wounded inside of them, burning our guys alive. It's horrible stories, horrible stories. So we finally get out though. Well, we're getting out of Chosen Reservoir. Now... we're on that road back down south. But again, the Chinese know where we're going. They know exactly what the plan is. There's only one way to go, and there's only one road to take to get there. So picture this. Picture this road, but we're not dealing with flat ground. This is North Korea here. There are mountains and huge hills on the sides of the roads. The Chinese
are up in the mountains. They're up in the hills shooting down on the convoys at all time, making life hell for the convoys. So the American air power is really what helped save our bacon during this whole thing, as they would fly back and forth all day long, providing air cover, strafing the troops on the ground, bombing the Chinese troops on the ground, trying to keep them off of our guys as the convoy heads south. And something else to keep in mind, this convoy, remember, what a nightmare it is when a vehicle stops becoming a vehicle and starts becoming dead weight. You know what it's like in traffic now, when you're in traffic now. If one person hits their brakes for whatever reason, a legitimate reason or otherwise, somebody hits their brakes, how much it screws up everyone behind you, creates this horrible yo-yo effect where it just screws everything up. Well, picture this. You're on a convoy heading south. The Chinese communists are pouring fire into your truck. You're on your fourth driver, trying to shoot back, trying to stay alive. And then, you stop. Why do you stop? Because the second one of these vehicles becomes disabled or the driver gets killed, now the vehicle's not only disabled and the driver dead, it's in the way. Now everybody's stopped behind you. So you have to get out and either get the vehicle up and running again or decide if you can get it up and running again and then get it off the road. Picture this. You ever do anything under the hood? Are you one of the mechanic types or just, you know, check your oil, something basic like that? Good. Now imagine doing it when it's 20 below and machine gun fire shooting at you. Makes it a little more difficult. No, this is what it was like. This is what the escape back down south was like. And then there had to be engineering projects where there is a bridge that has to be rebuilt. And so they're airdropping in materials to build a bridge that tanks have to go across. It's an incredible story. And if you're not a reader, look, if you are a reader, there are a bunch of great books on it. The Last Stand of Fox Company, I believe, is one of the best ones. On Desperate Ground is the name of it. That's the best Korea book I've ever read. Chris, I don't want to hear about the audiobooks, okay? We're not going into that with you today, but there are good books on it. If you're not a reader at all, there are great documentaries out there. Great ones for free on wherever you stream your stuff. The last time I looked, there were. Whether it was Netflix or Amazon or whatever, just do yourself a favor and take some time and look into Korea, okay? So that's giving you a bit of a backdrop on these stories I'm about to tell you or these citations I'm about to go over. Let's do the first one. This is William J. McClung, United States Marine Corps in Korea. This is for the Navy Cross. The President of the United States of America takes pleasure in presenting the Navy Cross to Master Sergeant William J. McClung III, United States Marine Corps, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy of the United Nations while serving as non-commissioned officer in charge of advanced elements of Headquarters Company, Headquarters Battalion, 1st Marine Division during action against enemy aggressor forces in the Republic of Korea on the 7th of December 1950. When his unit was attacked by a numerically superior and well-entrenched enemy force employing automatic weapons, machine guns, mortars, and rocket launchers, Master Sergeant McClung repeatedly exposed himself to short-range enemy fire in order to deploy and direct the fire of his party to better advantage. Although the lead truck of his convoy was afire, which made him easily visible to the enemy, he moved from man to man over a period of 3 hours, lending words of encouragement and controlling their fire. When two burning vehicles brightly illuminated the defensive area, making his unit's position untenable, he calmly directed his men to new positions in an area offering better concealment and improved firing conditions. Returning to the illuminated area, he was mortally wounded while removing wounded Marines to concealed positions in the face of the enemy. By his outstanding leadership, cool courage, and selfless devotion to duty throughout, Master Sergeant McClung served to inspire others of his group toward the successful repulse of the enemy attack, thereby upholding the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. And he gallantly gave his life for his country. Now, this guy also had won a medal in Japan. He'd won a medal in World War II, so this was this dude was already a legend. But this is another one of those stories that and you can read right past it unless you get it. Returning to the illuminated area, he was mortally wounded while removing wounded Marines to concealed positions. Their area, like I said, the vehicles got disabled. They then lit on fire. This is very dangerous because the Chinese would attack at night. They love to attack at night. And the second the fire gets there, well, that's the gigantic beacon. Look, shoot there. So the Chinese start attacking. Okay, so he moves his men. Let's get out of this area, move them to a safer area. But people, when you're moving, when you're in combat and you're scared and you're getting shot at, people are getting shot. People are being wounded. And you have to make decisions. You have to make decisions on bringing them along or leaving them to die. Well, we don't like to leave people to die, although it does happen. It happens a lot. Think of the bravery. Just marinate for a few minutes on the bravery of heading back into the line of fire to grab your men who are exposed and wounded. All right, we'll finish up with Korea, then it's Vietnam time. Next.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, honoring the fallen on Memorial Day today. Here's some more names you have emailed in. Lieutenant Colonel Mario Carrizo, Corporal Rafael Arruda, Sam Griffith, First Lieutenant Philip Neal, Staff Sergeant Umberto Timoteo, Sergeant Frank Carville, Sergeant Ryan Doltz, Specialist Christopher Duffy, Staff Sergeant Kevin D. Davis, Lieutenant Colonel David Green, Mike Probst, Corporal Kelly Groth, Staff Sergeant Kobe Schwab, PFC David Bringman. And we will keep reading those names you have emailed in to honor the fallen throughout the show. Let's finish up with a few more of these Navy crosses here, and then we're going to do some Vietnam stuff next hour. This Navy cross is for a Lawrence Everett Lett. The President of the United States of America takes pride in presenting the Navy Cross posthumously to Corporal Lawrence Everett Lett, United States Marine Corps, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy of the United Nations while serving as a squad leader of Company I, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, 1st Marine Division, in action against enemy aggressor forces in the Republic of Korea on the 27th of October, 1952. Participating in an attack to recapture a vitally important sector of the main line of resistance, which was previously overrun by the enemy, Corporal Lett fearlessly led his squad through an intense enemy artillery, mortar, and small arms fire to reach his portion of the objective and single-handedly charged several enemy bunkers, hurling hand grenades and firing his rifle to rout the hostile troops. Although painfully wounded at point-blank range by hostile machine gun fire from one emplacement, he succeeded in completely destroying the enemy position. When his men became separated from the platoon, he gallantly continued in the attack until the enemy was forced to withdraw and then reorganized his squad to assault a second objective. Throughout this action, he constantly exposed himself to withering hostile fire and, moving into an enemy trench, courageously engaged three enemy soldiers in hand-to-hand combat until he fell mortally wounded. By his indomitable fighting spirit, valiant leadership, and marked fortitude in the face of heavy odds, Corporal Lett served to inspire all who observed him and contributed in large measure to the success of his squad in accomplishing its mission. His great personal valor reflects the highest credit upon himself and sustains and enhances the finest traditions of the United States Naval Service. And he gallantly gave his life for his country. He was 20 years old at the time. Also had added a silver star to his resume. That goes back to, remember what I was talking about? This is why I do the history of them first. The various positions you would have around chosen reservoir. Well, remember, and they were normally numbered, the hills. So let's just make up a number here. Hill 200. All right, I'm on Hill 200. It's designated. They get that number from the map, but set that aside. So I'm on Hill 200. My unit has Hill 200. And we're fighting off the Chinese. And the Chinese are sending wave after wave after wave after wave at us. One, it mentioned hand-to-hand fighting. That was very, very common in Korea for a couple reasons. One, there were so many Chinese, it was hard to kill them all before they physically got to you. And two, Many times they didn't have guns, so they would send them up there with spears, knives, whatever they have, and you end up physically fighting them. There are stories of men hacking at Korea dudes with their e-tool, with their little mini shovels, with rocks, with whatever you've got in your hands. I know it's just savage fighting. But if you lost one of those hills, and it happened several times, if you got run off one of your hills, one of your strategic points, you have to have that hill. You would reorganize and take it back. Now, it's hard enough defending that hill. Picture trying to take that hill, charging uphill through the ice and the snow and the freezing and the grenades coming downhill at you. That was Korea. That's what these guys did. Navy Cross for Arthur George Morrison. President of the United States of America takes pride in presenting the Navy Cross posthumously to First Lieutenant Anthony George Morrison, United States Marine Corps, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy of the United Nations while serving as commanding officer of Company E, 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, 1st Marine Division, in action against enemy aggressor forces in the Republic of Korea on the 11th of November, 1952. During a night raid on a strongly defended enemy position, 1st Lieutenant Morrison volunteered to move to an exposed vantage point more than 1 mile forward of the main line of resistance to more effectively call in supporting fire. When the first squad of the attack platoon contacted the enemy and suffered heavy casualties, he personally led the two remaining squads in an assault to aid the stricken unit in recovering their wounded and in disengaging in an orderly manner. Regrouping his forces, he skillfully adjusted supporting arms fire, which greatly reduced long-range enemy weapons, and again spearheaded the attack through devastating hostile fire in a valiant attempt to envelop the objective. Throughout the fierce engagement, he repeatedly exposed himself to withering barrage of fire in order to encourage and exhort his men to heroic endeavor in accomplishing the mission. When the unit sustained several casualties and it became necessary to withdraw, he directed his forces to the main line of resistance, remaining with the rear guard to ensure that all his men were accounted for. While helping carry a casualty back to friendly lines, he was mortally wounded by an incoming enemy mortar shell. By his exceptional valor, outstanding leadership, and unwavering devotion to duty in the face of great odds, First Lieutenant Morrison served to inspire all who observed him and enhance the finest traditions of the United States Naval Service. And he gallantly gave his life for this country. I don't know what's more impressive, volunteering to go a mile away from your friends to call in supporting fire, or staying behind with the rear guard. Remember, rear guard, guarding while your men retreat, while your men move to a different location. Rear guard is some of the most dangerous stuff you can do because you're alone. Your friends are leaving you. You volunteered to fight the enemy so your friends can live. That's what today's about right there, man. And then you're carrying one of your guys back and mortar round lands, and that's it. And that's what we honor today, heroism like that. We will move on and do some Vietnam stuff for our final hour. Next.